Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Live here in the Angelica's Mexican Grill Studios, I'm Andy Griffin. Thanks for tuning in this morning. And Chris Staley is here. It's Mayor Thursday. He is a mayor. He has been a mayor for a little while. He's going to be a mayor for longer because he already, I guess, technically haven't won yet, Chris. But you are running unopposed as mayor of Washington City.
I need at least one vote. I'm lobbying very hard for that vote to be my dear wife, Lynette. If I get her vote again...
Well, you get to vote, too, so actually you don't even need Lynette, right?
Well, I do need her. I definitely need her vote of confidence.
I guess technically somebody could write someone in, right, and get a few votes that way.
It's happened before in Santa Clara the last election.
Oh, really? We're write-in, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But I mean, how many write? I mean, everybody would have to write someone in, and it would be, I don't see that happening. So, Chris, thanks for coming today. Appreciate you, man.
It's good to be here.
Chris has been coming on. Well, you were elected in, give me the year.
Like, well, 4 years ago, so 2021.
2021, okay. And Kenny Nielsen was the mayor before that. He used to come in on a regular basis.
The legend.
The legendary Kenny. I don't see Kenny much anymore. I see his brother, Bags, all the time.
Yeah.
At ball games and stuff.
You don't see Russ? Russ is usually at the Pineview games.
Yeah, I see Russ around a bit, but I see Bags pretty much all the time. So I like Bags. He's a good guy. Doesn't he teach school over there at Pineview?
He does.
As well?
So, yeah.
Cool. And obviously I see one Chris Staley around too. Mr. Staley is Chris and Burke are the two Staleys I know the most.
Yes.
Burke, of course, former coach at Dixie High School, won some state championships as a baseball coach there and former principal at a couple of different elementary schools. In fact, after he was coach, he was principal at my kids' elementary school, Washington Elementary, for a while. And so it was kind of cool. Like, I already know him. Yeah, I know him. I knew him before you guys did it. But I think, didn't he have to sleep on the roof or shave his head or something when they did a can drive?
Yeah, I mean, he is the ultimate motivator. And if you could bottle up what he has and what he gives to those, you know, ball players and students, I mean, you would be a rich person.
And he's retired from the principal thing, but he's now on the Washington County School Board.
School Board, and he says every day is Saturday, so he's hunting a lot on their property on Cedar Mountain and building a cabin and
very cool.
Whatever he wants to do, Andy.
Yeah.
You know.
I know.
You know.
Chris is referring to the fact that I have announced that I am retiring. Probably, I say that I told the boss at the end of the month, but the boss is kind of like, well, if we hire someone at the end of the month, will you stay for a week or so and train the new guy? And I'm like, yeah, I will. So, my sweet wife, who we talked about last month on here, she is retiring as well. And she has to see if she can deal with me 24 hours a day.
Oh, my goodness. The whole city's going to fall apart. All of the progress we've made, as soon as Shelley walks out that door at the end of October, it's going to all fall apart.
Well, you need to get, Chris, you need to get a fixer, a person that gets things done. Because that was really, her job title was executive assistant, right?
But right.
Her, basically, her job was that whatever needs to be fixed, she'll fix it. And she has. And she does that with the family, too, by the way. So I'm glad to get her full-time fixing things in the family.
Well, and careful what you ask or even hint at, because it will be done.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, I understand they are, her job is being divided out amongst other people too, so they're not hiring one specific person to replace her.
So you know, a mayor and the elected body, we set the policy.
Mm-hmm.
City manager, department head, staff enact the policy. So that is Jeremy's plan.
Yeah,
he hasn't let me down before. But I said, are you sure? Are you sure that can work? And he is assuring me that it can work.
He was, my wife said he's a little bit mopey, a little bit sad about losing Shelley.
Well, why shouldn't he be?
Yeah.
We are all going to miss her dearly. And, you know, Shelley's been there for how many years? Is it close to 30?
29. She's been 30 because she worked in Logan for a year and a half. And then, but she's been in Washington City for 29 years.
Yeah. And she was there with Judge Bunnell and then. Judge Stegmiller and Judge Graff.
I forget the old city manager's name. What was it?
So we had Ralph McClure.
Ralph McClure, that's right.
Good old and Ralph. So she has been, you know, Washington over that time period, over the last, we have doubled in size each of the last three decades.
Right.
So picture that exponential growth. And she has been right in the thick of it. So when you talk about a city that was between 3,000 and 4,000 residents 30 years ago,
yeah,
today, pushing or exceeding 40,000 residents, she has really had,
unbelievable.
She's been on quite the ride.
Yeah. They met, the old city offices was small, yeah, little,
a brown
little
brick.
Yeah. And there were, I think she said about 5,000 residents when she started. So,
mm-hmm.
Wow. Things have changed a lot.
Yep.
Your estimate right now, population of Washington City?
So it depends on where you look. We have about 25% of our connections as like secondary homes.
Oh, right, right.
So
right. Do they
so
count or not?
We have to be able to provide the services for them. But right now, where I like last census data showed us around 35,000, but I think we exceed 40 right now.
Well, that would have been 5 years ago, right? 2020.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember the year, but that's the number that keeps in that's in my mind. But I would say that a safe estimate is 40,000 plus. I think St. George's 110 plus, but I haven't followed. So we're about a third, you know, about a third the size, but you know, significantly heavier residential, you know,
right,
suburban neighborhoods.
Well, but Washington City is growing commercial as well, right? I mean, you have some pretty cool stuff on the horizon from what I hear.
Yeah, I mean, we had a nice little presentation by our economic development director last night, and,
okay,
you know, we've got a lot in the works, mainly along that I-15 corridor.
Right.
You know,
Winco for starters. Right?
Winco has got their building permit. It's under review right now. You know, we've got multiple hotels. We've got the One Health clinic that's there next to the fire station. You know, Grapevine is starting to get traction again. Washington Gateway on the north east side of 13 is getting some traction. So that's a really nice spot. I mean, you have the Winco and then you have the Boilers, you know, a conservation garden and a natural spring. But just to the east of that along Buena Vista, there's also what we call the Buena Vista Commercial Plaza. And there are a number of commercial pads being cut in right there. So it's exciting and we need it. I mean, Washington is probably, you know, countywide, we're about 17% of the population. But we collect closer to 13% of the sales tax. So we don't quite collect.
Yeah.
So let me put that in perspective. If you take our good friends and neighbors in St. George, they're just over, you know, my numbers show that they're just over 50% of the population.
Right.
But they're collecting about 65% of the sales tax revenue.
Most of the
so
here.
A lot of the outlying communities will continue to shop in St. George. And so what we're really trying to do with that focus on economic development and those commercial services for our residents is not only provide those locally closer to home, but also we need that sales tax revenue in order to continue to pay for our police officers, our firefighters,
right,
roads, parks. And frankly, that's 80 to 90% of our budget, just public safety.
Yeah.
So that's the motivation.
I'm guessing this happens a lot, right? You have a bigger city, and if we think really big cities, you know, you go to, you know, St. Louis, or you go to Kansas City or Salt Lake or Portland or whatever, you're going to have the kind of the commercial hub is the city, mm-hmm, and then you have a lot of what they call bedroom communities around it. But I guess your goal, though, is to make Washington City not just a bedroom community, right? You want it to be its own living thing.
Well, there are so many, you know, valuable community assets that are in St. George, the university, the hospital, the mm-hmm airport. And honestly, and as a community, as elected officials down here, we all work really well together. We recognize that. We lean on St. George, and that's not going to change. But really, what we're trying to do is kind of along that economic, kind of along that I-15 corridor, we need to continue to build out and then strategically some neighborhood and community commercial areas thoughtfully placed in other areas. And we're not really trying to compete with St. George, but what we're really trying to do is have a sales tax revenue that goes into our general fund along with property taxes that pays for the community service that is proportionate to our population within the community. So we're just trying to, we've got a little ground to make up because, frankly, as you know, for so many years, Washington City was just a really good, a really well-kept secret.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, the downtowners loved their big, deep lots with the gardens from natural spring water, and the farmers were content to grow alfalfa and have that lifestyle. But as St. George grew, the area grew and Washington grew into these amazing neighborhoods. So now we've got to provide those municipal services.
Right. And Washington City is still it's kind of a small town feel in a lot of ways.
Yes.
And I love that. I lived in Washington City for 19 years. We don't live there at the moment. We might come back.
I'm going to award you at some point, Andy, like emeritus Washington City resident.
There you go.
I'm going to find that time if I can work around your retirement schedule to appropriately give that award.
Schedule's pretty open, so we can figure something out. Yeah, the time we spent lived in Washington, and of course, all my kids went to Washington Elementary and the middle school and Pineview High School.
Yep.
And my son, he started a business not long ago, and the name of it is Dogtown LLC.
Love
right?
It. Yeah, after my own heart.
So we definitely are Washington at heart for sure. I've actually lived in Cedar, Hurricane, St. George, and Washington. I have not lived on the west side, Ivins and Santa Clara, but I've lived in the central and east side of the county in several different locations. So, I did appreciate really all those years living in Washington City and the feel of being a Washingtonian, right? It was a big deal. So, and you don't, no disrespect to St. George at all, I don't think you feel that as much as you do in a city like Washington City or Hurricane for that matter. I think that feel is there a little more hometown pride type stuff.
Yeah.
So
I love it.
I saw online, somebody had posted online, thank you Mayor Chris Daley for your letter this month in the newsletter. And I'm like, okay, if somebody's thanking the mayor for a newsletter, I got to go read this thing. And I did read it. I discovered two things. Number one, first of all, I didn't know you had the writing chops like that. That was very well written. I don't know who edited for you. Did you get your wife to read it first before you published it? Or
I write it, but she definitely reads it. Okay. Yeah, she is my best critic.
But I thought, first of all, like I said, I thought it was really well written. And the other thing that struck me about it, we had actually just talked about a lot of what was in your letter on this show last month, because you had come on, it was what, a week after the whole Charlie Kirk thing, and your discovery of the person that did the shooting was from Washington City, and the fact that you were not in the country when all this was going on, and
how
helpless you felt over there. You're like, I want to be there, I need to be back, but I'm here, but you touch on all that, and you talk a little bit about I guess there was some kind of a protest or something going on in France. They do that all the time, I guess, in France. They love to protest. But a French lady had asked you, how can you feel or do you feel safe in America? And you were like, yeah, I feel fine in America.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that experience.
No, it's amazing how sometimes a turn of events and a timeline, even on the other side of the world, you start to reflect back on that, but literally we were just kind of oblivious to what was happening, and we were in Annecy, which is a beautiful little city in the near the Alps, but we had rented e-bikes and we rode around Lake Annecy and we were returning them, and then there was this protest that was like, there were a lot of people that were gathered there, and we had to turn our e-bikes in across the street and then come back across the street to get to our hotel.
You had to get through this huge crowd.
It and then back through it. And really on the way back, it had grown significantly. And I knew that it was, I'm trying to remember exactly what they called that particular strike, but it was like ferme to close everything. Huh. And so, I'm walking and it's literally we're walking back across it and the crowd starts to move. So you kind of get caught up in the wave, and all of a sudden we're marching along with this French strike. and I still speak French okay, I guess. But I struck up a conversation, and the lady, that she just asked me that with everything going on in America right now, do you feel afraid, or do you have fear? Is kind of how she said it. And I remember answering just no, not at all. And I still don't. And so that was kind of part of that point. But,
and she probably kind of knew nothing about you, right? She didn't know you were Crest Daily from Washington City, Utah, or anything like that. She just knew you were an American.
Right. But that's, but I think if, as I pondered that question, I mean, the world watches America. The world is paying attention to what's going on.
Yeah.
You know, I love how Reagan used to say that we're that, you know, shining light on a hill.
Yeah.
But when we're not, when we're showing this polarized society, like of verbal rhetoric and then violence, the world watches too. And what kind of example are we setting?
Yeah.
So she was thinking that, yeah, here I am on strike for my own country, but aren't you fearful for your country? That's serious. I mean, that is a very small sample size, but it shows some of the sentiment from, you know, kind of the world sentiment.
Yeah, and honestly, I've thought about that before. You know, when we travel abroad, I wonder what they think of America and Americans. And now that the world has become a smaller place with the advent of all the social media, you hear what people think about America, and it's certainly very concerning. But I'm curious now, she asked you this, she talked to you about this, and you responded, no, I don't feel fear. But talk about why and maybe explain a little bit your answer.
Yeah. So it was later that day, like we talked about last time I was on the air, that I actually got the texts and then talked to my daughter. And little did I know that the timeline would unfold like that. And I explained a little bit to you on and off air and in the letter, just, you know, how one of those moments, it just felt so, it felt so helpless. I felt so helpless.
Yeah, for sure.
And when you try to represent an area and then you find out that the perpetrator on something like this is actually from your area, it was this total dichotomy of emotion.
Right.
You know, you're kind of almost brought to your knees by this. Like, how could this happen?
Yeah.
And then at the same time, just friends from all over, from just community friends texted me, I hope you're doing okay, Mayor. I know this is hard. And all the way from, you know, to Senator Curtis's office. Let me know, Mayor, if I can do anything for you. Or, and this is what I thought was so remarkable about Senator Curtis's. And if the Robinson family needs anything, let me know.
Wow.
You know, in the meantime, you know, talking with Chief Williams, you know, with my city manager and trying to navigate the press onslaught from the New York Times to News Nation. You know, TMC got one of my daughter's phone numbers and was just hounding her.
Oh, wow.
Dad, how do I respond? Ignore. You know, but then you start to reflect and then you feel like, especially when I got back in America and I said, no, I still don't feel fear. We're better than this. And that's why I named that article. And I write one every month. Usually I write it on just factual things. I don't really open up emotionally very often.
Right.
But I thought, no, this needs to be a turning point for how we interact with one another and how we calm the rhetoric and calm the violence.
I watched a movie last night with my wife called Amish Grace. And first of all, I'm going to endorse the movie because I think it's a wonderful movie. I will not endorse the acting. The acting was fair and not great, but not terrible. But the message of the movie, and just you think of the Amish Grace, what does that mean? Well, if you'll remember, I think it was 2006, a gunman went in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, went into an Amish schoolhouse and he killed 10 little girls. It's unfathomable to think that someone would do that. And he said in his suicide note, he said, I wanted to offend God because God let my, and he had a child die or lived one day or something. And he was mad at God all those years. And he said he wanted to offend God. But the message of the movie was not that. The message of the movie was these Amish people, the dads and moms and brothers and sisters went to the family of this shooter. He had committed suicide after he did it. They went to his wife and to his kids and his father-in-law and said, what can we do for you? How can we know you are hurting. How can we help you get through this hurt? And for me, I was just like, wait a minute. And the movie kind of centers around the mom of one of the girls that died, and it took her a long time to come to this full circle, to this moment of forgiveness. Even though the leaders of the Amish community forgave right away, it took her a little while because she was so angry and so mad, and as you can only imagine, Chris. But the whole message of the movie was, you can hold on to the hate, and it reminds me of the Erica Kirk and how she got up and forgave Tyler Robinson, and she says the forgiveness isn't for him, and it's not a pardon, and it's not a forgetting, it's a forgiving, and the forgiving is for the person doing the forgiving, to go, I'm not going to let hate and anger and revenge rule my life the rest of my life. I'm not going to let that happen. And the message was unbelievable. And I'm not going to lie. There might have been some allergies in the air or something. I was wiping my eyes during that.
Shelley may not have been the one crying.
Probably not.
But, you know.
Yeah. Here's one quote from that movie. Hate is a very big, very hungry thing with lots of sharp teeth. It will eat up your whole heart and leave no room left for love. We are lucky that God understands this. He is the one that will hand out the punishment so that we don't have to carry this hate around in our heart if we don't want to, if we are willing to forgive. Man, I mean, just powerful stuff. And I don't want to turn this into a priesthood lesson or anything like that, but I think that all of us are wronged occasionally in life. I had a business, a guy that I worked with professionally, this was 20 something years ago, who, for lack of a better word, he screwed me over.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And cost me a lot of money. And I know I held on to that for a long, long time. And when I saw this guy in professional circles, I couldn't talk to him. I couldn't look at him. I didn't want to. And I never did anything to him. That was never my plan, but I just was like, I think I held on to, I don't know if hate is the right word, but I held on to this anger for a long, long time.
And resentment.
Yeah, resentment. And it took a long time for me to understand that I'm not doing the resentment, the anger, the hate, whatever it was hurting me. It wasn't hurting him. It was hurting me. And it was pointless. So, you know, and if we think about, I asked, and by the way, credit to Celeste Malloy, Congresswoman Celeste Malloy, that day when we found out it was Tyler Robinson, and I wasn't the mayor of the city, but I was hurting too, Chris, because I'm like, it can't be a guy from my town, Washington City. It cannot be. It just can't be true. And I was ready to, I mean, she kind of had to, this is figurative, not literal, she kind of had to walk me off the edge of the cliff, because I was like, I don't want to do radio anymore. I don't want to talk politics anymore. I don't want, because this kind of thing is too real.
Right.
Because it was Tyler Robinson from Washington City, Utah. And I got a call from Celeste Malloy that afternoon, and I actually played, it was like an 8-minute talk with her, but she was so good at just kind of going, look, you know, it's not about intimidation. We cannot be afraid to still speak the truth. And my niece had put up a post, Chris, about how can I go on and tell my kids to speak the truth when the truth might kill them someday? And I was like, yeah, she's right. And what, you know, I can't do this anymore. But Celeste came on and said, listen, we need to understand that truth is still truth and right is still right, no matter what some misguided young man from Washington City, Utah went and did that one day. And I think Erica Kirk and her forgiving him too, that was a big part of the healing process for all of us, I believe. So, but great letter. Thank you so much for writing that letter. And you can, if you want to read the letter, I think you can go to WashingtonCityUtah.gov, right? Isn't that the?
Yeah, then they have archived just all the newsletters.
All the newsletters.
I was surprised when you told me you read it. I'm like, it's just paper. It's typically just print. And
it was well written, Chris. Yeah. I was impressed. I didn't know you could write. You're an insurance guy and a mayor. Who knew you could write like that?
I'm a Panther.
That's true. If you are looking for a second career later on, though, I think writing might be there for you. That was very well done. Kind. Very well done. So, all right, talked right through a commercial break, so we better get that thing
Let's
in.
Get it in.
I'm going to get fired. Wait, it could fire me, I guess, but what good would it do? I'm leaving anyways. So. We'll be right back.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Welcome back. I'm Andy, 937 on KDXU. I'm here with Chris Stanley, the mayor of Washington City and a proud resident, proud dog towner, right?
You know it.
Crest is actually he'll be on the ballot on November 4th, but there is no other mayor candidate right now for Washington City. Well, not I mean there is no other one. So he will most likely win unless everybody writes Donald Duck in or something. I don't think that's going to happen. But Mayor, I saw this on the news today. Southern Utah is under a flash flood watch beginning at noon today all the way through Saturday night. We may just get those monsoons that we've been hoping for and hoping for and hoping for.
You know, I actually, when I was sitting in the parking lot before I came in, I was reading the news, and I sent that to my city manager and public works director. I'm sure they're already aware of that.
Yeah.
But it's been a dry year.
Oh, yeah.
Last night at our workshop meeting, I had Zach come and just give a water supply update. And the water year goes from October 1 through September 30th. So we just finished the water year. And this, you know, 3 months of 24 and 9 months of 2025, we were the second lowest, before what they call the St. George precipitation, we were the second lowest amount of rainfall precipitation on record.
In history.
The last one was like 1955, 56.
It was 51, I think it was. But yeah.
Right in there. Maybe, yeah. And had we not had that little rain spike at the end of August, or the end of September,
We would have
been the lowest.
Wow.
And let me put this in a little more perspective. So it was like right around 4.3 something inches. Zach would know exactly. Average is over 9.5.
Yeah.
So we had less than half. Yeah. And the issue was this. So typically, you know, we looked at kind of the graphs, like the charts of what it does.
Mm-hmm.
What we didn't have last year was the snowpack in the mountains to kind of gradually flow down into our reservoirs.
Right.
Not only did we not have that, then the monsoon, we had like one monsoon storm and it came really, really late. So all of those things that we typically get on an average year, we did not get. Thank heavens the prior year or two were good water years, so our reservoirs are still relatively full.
Yeah.
But we need that, and the problem right now is we have really dry, like the moisture content of the soil is really dry. So we have some trouble.
Yeah, we have to replenish. We've got to fill the soil with moisture first.
Because otherwise it'll just suck it up, and we need that to accumulate and build up on Pine Valley.
Yeah. By the way, so this is not the water year, but this is the calendar year for right here where we're sitting, 3.52 inches.
Yeah.
In this calendar year, since January 1. So mm-hmm. Unbelievable. When you consider, a place like a buddy that calls in from NBC News Radio, Rory, they get rain every day. So the rainfall in Florida is something like 120 inches a year. We get 8 or 9 a year in a good year, and we got 3.5 so far this calendar year.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. So as a mayor, obviously it concerns you. Is this something that you feel like drastic measures need to be taken?
So we need to be realistic about it.
Okay.
So again, we're looking at charts, and so my degree's in accounting, so I'm a little bit of a number guy. I'm not as nerdy as an engineer. Sorry, any engineers listening. We appreciate what you do. Like, you're very important.
But, they are problem solvers.
But my kids say that, you know, spreadsheets are your love language, Dad.
Yeah.
So, but looking at the chart that was shared last night was interesting because we have continued, and I wish I had the chart in front of me. I could give you exact numbers. But here's what's happening. Obviously, we have equivalent residential unit connections for primarily residential connections, but also commercial connections. That is increasing with the growth. But what's interesting is the amount of water usage over the last 4 or 5 years is holding relatively steady, if not going down, despite bringing in additional residents.
A lot more.
So what we're seeing, what the data tells us, is that this county buying into conservation, not a left wing, not a right wing issue, but a common sense, we live in the desert issue.
Yeah.
So that's working. The conservation measure is working. And we're doing things that nowhere else in the country are doing. So earlier this week, I'm also on the board of directors for the board of trustees for the Washington County Water Conservancy District. And we were there with an engineer, George, I think his last name's Elliot, but he and some of his staff and Zach and the gang, we toured the Chief Toker Reservoir.
Yeah.
And we're building a dam. And when George was, I rode out with George in his truck, and when we were just talking, he said, when I go to these conferences and meetings and telling them that we're actually building a dam in 2025, people look at me like I'm crazy because nowhere else in the country. I mean, dam building has become such a polarizing environmental issue that the fact that we're building a reservoir, and granted, you know, we're like 3,500 to 4,000 acre feet dam, so it's relatively small, about a third the size of Gunlock.
Right.
But we're building one, and it was really cool just sitting there watching all of the, you know, heavy equipment pack the clay and build the foundation for that dam. And that's going to help us, like, we talk about one water, but all water is not created equal. And the water that we'll be able to capture from Ash Creek and from some of the reuse treatment there that we'll be able to hold in Chief Toker, it will allow us to use some of that other really good water for drinking. So we're taking all of these measures like one step at a time. So I'm not panicked, but I am praying for rain personally and snow. Because we need that.
We need it, yeah, for sure. Just got a text. Hey, Mayor, this is Lisa from Pineview Estates with a small request. There's a no man's land area between the office building on the corner of Sandia and Merrill and the area behind the homes on Casario Circle. I'm not feeling this. The plants are growing over the sidewalk, encroaching into the walking space. Can the city trim or remove those plants?
Thank you, Lisa. Yes, and what we also need to do is we need to get that trail. We got to get that cleaned up. We need to get that overgrowth cleaned up. And then we've got to bring that trail down.
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked about that. So what I'll do, my commitment to Lisa is to follow up with some of our public works guys and our parks and rec guys and find out why we haven't got that trail built down there. Because once we build the trail in, that'll also define that space and help us maintain the bank of that. I know right where she's talking.
Okay, cool. I wanted to ask you, back to the water topic, Chief Toker, Tokerville, yeah. You've got the graveyard wash and the other one they're talking about out there in Ivins and Santa Clara. But the one in Washington City that everyone's been talking about for 100 years, I'm told now, is a Warner Valley Reservoir. Yeah. Zach tells me we're getting closer, but closer, yeah. What does that mean? Has he given you an
update? So here was the update he gave to me and my council last night, is that... I forget the exact, if it was an environmental or what the exact approval was, but we had no protests. So he said, had the government not shut down, I think we would have likely had this already.
Wow.
Okay. And by this, I mean the land swap.
Right.
So that the water district will own the footprint of where that reservoir will be. So we're hopeful that shortly after the government opens back up, that land swap will be approved. And then it's on the radar. But we really couldn't pin Zach down with a time frame.
Yeah, I tried to.
On that.
<Didn't>
and,
<work. laughs>
you know, he's small but tough like that sometimes.
He's dancing and zigging and zagging and
you
stuff.
Know, but,
and
yeah. But I can tell you one of the things that we're doing for this regional reuse program, which is critical, is a lot of the ability with building the new Chief Toker, the other reservoirs, smaller reservoirs that you've mentioned, and really the lifeline for the community is primarily Sand Hollow mm-hmm. and Quail Creek. These are our, they provide for life and livelihood. They're like our big savings accounts that we live on, and our revenue is the rain and snowpack. So we need revenue so we don't draw down our savings accounts too much.
Good analogy. I like it.
But a big part of the regional reuse that's a collaborative effort is being able to have the pipes to move the water where we need to move it and treat it where we need to treat it. So that's going to precede Warner. But I think Warner's probably 10 years out. That's what George told me, probably 10 years out.
Yeah.
And it'll be a big, deep reservoir.
Will, you know, we were talking about revenue for the city, and obviously you won't own the reservoir, and Parks and Rec will probably, I mean, the National Park, whatever, will probably, maybe it's the state, anyway, own the recreation around it. But with things like that, there tends to be a lot of commercial develop around it. Is that maybe, Warner, is that something you think could be the future of income for the city?
Yeah, so we haven't really had an in-depth discussion about the recreation component of Warner, whether that will be like city or state park.
Okay.
It might be state if they can have some resources that make it, you know, even better. You know, we get spread pretty thin with our resources.
Right.
You know, I think what you've got to remember is that part of Washington is Warner Valley. So let me just kind of throw this out.
Always got a map out, folks. Here we go.
I've got my notes here, and even though it's on huge paper, I still need my glasses. So currently, Washington proper is just over 36 square miles. But you look down to where the Warner Valley Reservoir will be, and the Warner Valley all along the Hurricane Cliffs down to the Arizona border, it's another 32 miles. Now, we're not probably going to annex all of that in, but what I'm talking about is South Jordan has Daybreak.
Right.
At some point, parts of Warner Valley, including the reservoir, including areas just east of the Southern Parkway, will begin to come into Washington over time. After my job is done as mayor, Warner will build out over time. And there will be commercial areas there. I think where we're going to really see it, though, is right now I've got three or four, maybe five hotels along, you know, from 10 to 13 on I-15 at different phases of entitlement and construction.
Wow. Yeah.
And around the hotels will come retail restaurants and service.
Yeah.
Including some box stores.
Yeah, and he, I'd love for him to give me a hint about what those are going to be, but he can't. So,
did I not mention the Trader Joe's?
You haven't mentioned it yet.
Kidding.
No. Although we wouldn't object, we'll be right back.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
I hit the wrong button, Chris. You think after all these years of doing this, I would hit the right? No, I hit the wrong button. Anyway, welcome back, everybody. The Andy Griffin Show. Chris Daly is here, mayor of Washington City. Give us an update, Chris, if you don't mind, about downtown. What's going on there?
Yeah.
Is there any update, or is it still kind of in flux?
Yeah. So we've narrowed it to three,
okay,
and it's partners essentially that would be development partners, and the committee is vetting those. We've heard from them. The committee has not, as of yet, made a formal recommendation to the council.
Okay,
but we've got three really good applicants that were just kind of weighing it, and I was almost hopeful that we would have had a decision by yesterday. We just don't yet. So maybe by the 22nd, we'll have that. That process, like I said last time, will include a lot of public input, but we're really going to go back to our roots, and our Dogtown quote roots there include some commercial uses down there. It includes some residential uses, but I don't anticipate us going crazy with either. What I really want to see is what some might refer to as blighted areas or just dirt, you know, vacant lots, built out in an attractive way that brings value to the community. And what we're really calling, we're using the term placemaking, right?
As we
build our, build on that hometown identity that you've noticed having been a resident and remarked on, because that's really the special part of Washington. Is while we continue to grow and we have some development along I-15 and things, we still are a community that wants, I want it to feel more like a town than a city.
Yeah. So is it realistic? I know this is one of your goals for downtown Washington City to be kind of a walkable space. But I park, you know, if I'm not from there, I go, I park and I walk around and go to the different shops and the different, you know, spend time at Veterans Park. And is that realistic?
I think so. I hope I'm not naive, but I think that is. And but I don't see this being of a scale that tries to compete as like being a commercial driver.
Right.
Right? What we want is a place where the community wants to come down. Maybe there's a restaurant or an ice cream shop or some offices, but it's got to be to the scale that it enhances, not overtakes, what that crosshair of Telegraph and Main Street are.
Yeah.
We want, and also to have a little bit of new blood being able to own a place to live down there that just kind of strengthens, you know, the generations that have lived there. And we have to be forward thinking those ways. We can't just let it stay as it is. I kind of like the term, you know, act rather than just be acted upon.
Yeah. McCray was on yesterday, McCray Hepler, talking about some of the developments on Exit 10 area. Big old apartment complex coming in back kind of behind that commercial area. Hotels, was it three, four different hotels being built?
Primarily one on the south side of I-15 to Exit 13, but the others are going to be primarily on the north side. That Residence Inn by Marriott will connect right to the Spring Hill Suites. That one's almost done.
That's a great, I love Residence Inn. We've stayed there once or twice in other locations.
Yeah, right there off Green Spring Golf Course. Beautiful.
Yeah, and then, of course, Winco, we hope, will at some point be going vertical soon.
Yeah, and remember I mentioned that we also have the two 6,000-square-foot outbuildings.
Right.
So they designed those. That's in the building permit review process right now. So, look, if it's not going vertical by the end of the year, then... that I will take the heat next time I'm on the show.
the Quick Quack and Panera Bread are in Washington City, and then the Winco hopefully going vertical. Somebody had made a snide comment online when they announced they were building a Winco in Cedar. They're like, oh, that'll probably be built before the one in Washington.
You know, they don't know the staff. We've had a lot of turnover in our building department. We have a new community development director. We have a new building official and inspectors. And if you haven't built and been over and interacted with that department in Washington City lately, I challenge you to do it.
Nice.
Especially for the builders listening.
Yeah, build. Go over there and get a permit. Come on, build. Yeah. Seriously.
We're also looking forward to Veterans Day on November 11th. That's going to be a really exciting program.
Yeah, that's not very far away.
That's coming up.
Yeah, November 11th, and with any luck, I will be retired at that point, Mayor. So, but we'll get someone to interview you.
Well, we'll see who it is. Nobody will, you're like the man, the myth, the legend. Nobody replaces. But I just, you know, before we went to that break, and I really appreciated your comments about, you know, the state of society and the Amish Grace movie, and it got me thinking about something that I mentioned in a turning point letter that I wrote to the community. I mentioned that this doesn't define who we are, what happened.
Yeah.
But as I was listening to you, the thought came that maybe this is a defining moment for us as a community on how we respond.
Right.
And maybe that's kind of the message that I probably should have added there, but at least I'm adding it
You're
on here
now.
This is our defining moment. How are we going to calm the rhetoric? How are we going to avoid radicalization? How are we going to work together for America? Because that was the other point. I still believe in America.
Yeah. Yeah, I do too. And you know, somebody wise once said, it's hard times come, and hard times don't make the man. It's how the man reacts to the hard times that really makes the man. And that's what it's all about here. And I'm not saying these are hard times right now, but some hard things have happened.
It's a collective response.
How are we going to react to those things? So, that tragedy that happened out in Michigan to the at the church chapel. And I don't know about you, but every time now I go to church, I think, man, we are kind of sitting ducks, and how am I going to react to this? And how's my forgiveness
pause?
Am I going to be able to do it?
You know, on that note, Andy, one thing it makes me think of is how quickly the officers there in Michigan responded.
Yeah.
And I saw a little bit of body cam footage and how quickly they were able to, you know, resolve the situation.
Wow.
A month or so ago, I was on a ride along with a fire chief.
Quickly, we got 35.
I heard over the radio that there was a drowning.
Mm.
Within a minute or so, off-duty police officers, firefighters respond, save the girl's life.
Amazing.
That's the kind of community we live in. Yeah. People sacrifice and do what's right.
Doing the right thing. All right, Mayor, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure all these years working
with you. I'm going to miss you, buddy.
Thank you.
I'm still going to see you, but I'm going to miss this with you.
Absolutely. Well, folks, thanks for listening today. I'm off tomorrow. We'll talk to you next week.